I thought to do like this, that we will just briefly hear the Bhagavad Gita shloka, and then I will give a little explanation. And it's an enigmatic Gita shloka. You will not immediately know why I'm chosen that, but it will become very clear as you listen to the lecture. Ye pyanya devata bhakta jajante shadajanvita tepi mange vakonteya jajantya vidipuvakam aham hi sarvajnanam bhakta cha prabhu eva cha natu mang abhijananti tadvenatashavantite. Those who are devotees of other gods and who worship them with faith actually worship only me, O son of Kunti, but they do so in a wrong way. When a man pours water on the leaves and branches of a tree without pouring water on the root, he does so without sufficient knowledge or without observing regulative principles. Similarly, the process of rendering service to different parts of the body is to supply food to the stomach. The demigods are, so to speak, different officers and directors in the government of the Supreme Lord. One has to follow the laws made by the government, not by the officers or directors. Similarly, everyone is to offer his worship to the Supreme Lord only. That will automatically satisfy the different officers and directors of the Lord. The officers and directors are engaged as representatives of the government, and to offer some bribe to these officers and directors is illegal. This is stated here. Avidipurvakam. In other words, Krishna does not approve the unnecessary worship of the demigods, and I would like to add any human beings. In our lives, we all have certain psychological needs. And one need, which is very, very strong, is to be acknowledged by others, to be met with understanding and sympathy. Imagine we would be totally ignored when people would see us. They would see through us. They wouldn't acknowledge our presence. And when it's time for prasadam, they would not call us even. There would be a total, let me say, disregard of our personality. And if we would try to exist in such a situation, our heart would be full of despair. Therefore, the human being craves for that love and affection. Now, this is normal in the human society, normally given by the mother to the little child. It is said, if a child does not have a loving mother, it is not so important for him to have good food or toys and so on. There's nothing, absolutely nothing, which can replace for a child the need to grow on the milk of affection. This is important. Now, as the child grows older and outgrows his babyhood, he comes more into the care of the father, who looks at the child in a different way. The child represents, the mother represents the womb, whereas the father represents the world. The father will say, go to school, do your achievements, you know, be good in society so that you earn your love, or your attention. And this is a way which is problematic for many conditioned souls, to move from being loved to a position where you feel you have to earn the love by showing some extraordinary activities and some talents and some reaching some achievements. You can say our personality is like a leaking balloon. You know, it shrinks if there is not the constant input of attention, affection, and sympathy. I spoke today to a husband. His name will remain anonymous for certain reasons, and he said, and I said, so how is your Grihastha Ashram going? Any new realizations since we last met? And he said, yes, one realization. I have to give attention to my wife, otherwise she dies. Hare Krishna. Admit it, every one of you has one line over his forehead. It said, love me. Admit it. This is what I want to say. We have a balloon of an identity situation, and it leaks. If there is not a constant input of attention, sympathy, and care, we are nowhere. Where do we get this? Where do we fulfill this need? I would like to go today with you through a life of a dramatic personality who, in my understanding, represents this need very, very well. It's Karna. Karna is, as you well know, the firstborn son of Queen Kunti. But because Queen Kunti, how is the English word, conceived him, is it called conceived or conceived him, when she was not married, she had to give Karna away. Karna was, you can say, the son of Surya, the sun god, and he was born with such signs that he was a son. He had a shining armor, a plate on his chest, which was somehow connected with his body. It had grown into the skin, and shining earrings, which would give his face almost so much of a light. You know, when you would see him, he looked beautiful with his long kshatriya hair and these dancing earrings which were in his earlobes and which shone on his face. Now, Queen Kunti saw him as a baby and understood, my God, this is a powerful personality. But because society would not approve of her having a child without any marriage, she put him in a basket and drifted him down, floated him down the river Ganga. He was found by one charioteer called Adirad and his wife Radha, not his daughter, not our Radharani, Radha, and he was brought up as a charioteer. And he he constantly suffered from what you could call an anxiety of status. He always wanted to be better than a charioteer, and he knew he could do it. He felt that motor in him. When Queen Kunti put this little boy into a basket, she whispered to him, I will see you again, I know this, and I will recognize you by your earrings and the armor on your chest. And with this, Karna floats into history. We only see him back again at a tournament. Do you know what is a tournament? Tournament means a show of arms. Tournament is like a in medieval European times here in Belgium. I heard there were tournaments of knights. You know, they were galloping on horses and they had their lances and they wanted to see who was more powerful in using the lance and the sword and all the armor. So this is a tournament, and when Queen Kunti's five sons, who were known as the five Pandavas, were young princes, they were educated in martial arts by Dronacharya, right? And then when their education was completed, they showed their skills in using armors. And the one who showed his skills at the end was Arjuna. And my dear devotees, Arjuna invoked the Parvat mountain, and as he shot his arrow, it's called the Parvat Astra. As he shot his arrow, a mountain came flying. Then he showed what he had learned. He shot an arrow which became millions of arrows on the sky, and they reached a target and did something. There was a water arrow where the monsoon came and so on. And at the end of the day, everyone was going, Arjuna is the best, you know. Then, at that moment, Karna walks back into history. There is a loud sound of swords at the entrance of the arena, and a powerful, powerful warrior strides into the arena. When Kunti, who is there very happy about Arjuna's skills, sees him, she faints because she sees the earrings and the armor. She knows it's my son. And with a booming voice, Karna announces to Arjuna, O Pata, whatever you have done, I will do it better. You know, here we see now Karna, who suffers from this, you could say, constant minority complex. I'm only the son of a charity. It evokes, and he will now show what he knows, what he can. He will become an achiever, and he fulfills his promise. He uses his arrows so nicely until finally Arjuna and Karna stand opposite to each other, ready to engage in battle to see who is the better one. And fortunately or not, the sun sets in the western horizon and the day is over and the battle does not take place. From that moment on, Karna constantly tries to outdo Arjuna. They become rivals. Karna does not know that Arjuna only is his brother, but he thinks, I must be better than Arjuna. I must do something to blow up my balloon of my personality, that others will love me. And he becomes, he's coronated king, and and he becomes a supporter of Duryodhana. I'm going very fast through this because I want to come to a certain point. He becomes the best warrior in Duryodhana's army, and Duryodhana knows this man will be my main strength in fighting the Pandavas. Karna, who has been made a king by Duryodhana, is extremely grateful to Duryodhana and worships him almost like with bhakti, you know, with devoted surrender. He does everything what Duryodhana wants of him. He knows, in other words, I want love, and Duryodhana has given this love to me. Duryodhana has accepted me. Duryodhana has made me the king. Duryodhana is my friend. You know, every one of us who wants that this constant anxiety in the heart to get sympathy and love is met by a partner. Women want to have the ideal man, and the men want to be the ideal want to have the ideal woman, and they engage in a relationship where each other is supposed to give the other one what the other one needs, that love, that attention, that sympathy, and so on. Because let us go back to this existential situation which we all have, this writing on our forehead, I want love, I want to be loved. So Karna, who has this very, very much, he's really anxious to get it, finally gets it in the friendship with Duryodhana. And one day before the battle of Kurukshetra, he really makes that very clear. Krishna comes on the evening before the battle of Kurukshetra and says, Karna, I need to inform you about one thing. Don't fight against the Pandavas. You are their brother. You are the firstborn son of Queen Kunti. The other sons, the five Pandavas, came later. If you now leave the side of Duryodhana, who's against Dharma and who's against me, and join the Pandavas, Yudhishthira will worship you as the king of the earth. You want so much attention and sympathy, you will get it there. Karna says, Vasudev, I have given my heart to Duryodhana. I am loyal to him. He's my friend. I don't follow your advice. Then the same evening, Queen Kunti comes in tears. She comes in the undercover of the night. She sits before her son and says, Karna, my son. And then she takes her hand and just goes over his face, touches the earrings, touches the armor, and says, Karna, I have to confess. Out of social reasons, I gave you away. You floated down the Ganga. I'm so sorry. I am the cause of your misery. You always thought you were a low-born charioteer, and you always wanted to prove yourself, to be worthy in the world of men and get their attention. Everything would have been so easy if I could have declared that you are my son, but I couldn't do it at that time. I was too afraid, but now I'm not. I will declare to the world that you are the leader of the Pandavas. Karna, please, take courage. Please join. Karna says, Mother, have you noted? Duryodhana gave me the status I needed. He made me the king, not you. You rejected me. The friend is the highest. And to be loyal to the friend is the ultimate dharma of humanity. This is what he says. So, is this correct? I think it is wrong. It may be a human dharma, but this human dharma is only there for human realization. Karna did a grave mistake. He took the relationship to a human being to be more important than the relationship to Krishna. Krishna had appeared to him. Krishna had told him that I wish you to join your brothers. Karna had said no, and he had repeated this no when Queen Kunti, Krishna's great female devotee, had requested him for the same. Because in his desperate need for attention and sympathy, he placed more importance to a human relationship than to a relationship with God, with Krishna. And in this way, Karna solved the existential need which all of us have in a way which was limited. He solved the existential need through friendship, which on the human level is the highest dharma, but not on the Sanatana dharma, but on Sanatana dharma, the eternal relationship of the soul with God, it is more important to follow Krishna. And when you follow Krishna, at that time, two things will happen. Progress means to eliminate something and to accept something new. You know, like when we walk, my position with my left foot is position A, and my position with my right foot is position B. If I want to walk, I can't stand like this. I can't keep on standing like this. I have to change position. My left foot will go to position C, and my right foot to position D. So, what is it in English? D. Huh? In this way, movement can take place. Progress means elimination of old positions and acceptance of new positions. It is like walking does. So, in our Krishna conscious life, I feel it is very, very important to not repeat the mistake of Karna. That is, to look for a fulfillment of an existential need on one level and not recognize that it can be fulfilled on the level of Krishna. Therefore, Krishna says, I am the only enjoyer, master of everything. Those who do not recognize my true transcendental nature fall down. And Karna is like the hero and the anti-hero of the Mahabharata. He did not recognize that. He knew who was Krishna, but he didn't recognize him as such. And he went into battle with Krishna's devotees it was very dramatic what happened to him. He didn't fight up till the 16th day, because Grandfather Bhishma had always said, this Karna is only a charioteer. Why is he even a kshatriya? Why is he allowed to fight? And out of being hurt in his ego, he didn't fight all this time. He didn't fight. When Bhishma was felled down to the ground, and also Dronacharya was felled down to the ground, then on the 16 days, Karna rose to prominence and took over the army of his friend Duryodhana as the general in chief, the general in charge, and he led the troops against the Pandavas, and he was extremely successful. And that Pandavas lost so many people. And finally, he confronted Yudhishthira. And he defeated Yudhishthira, but he didn't kill him. He said, he touched him with his bow, and he said, never fight with a superior. And he knew, this is my brother, I will not kill him. On that same day, he met Bhimasena. He also defeated the strongest warrior in history, Bhimasena, but he also touched him with a bow. Deer said, "Small brute, don't fight with a real Kshatriya, won't you?" So he was really heavy. He had promised to Queen Kunti, there will always be 5 Pandavas in existence. "I will not kill Yudhishthira, I will not kill Bhima, nor will I kill the twins. There will be only one warrior with whom I will contest for life and death. And either he will live, and then I will not live, or I will live, or he will not live." So finally that one warrior met Karna on the battlefield in serious combat. It was a battle for life and death. It was such a battle, my dear devotees. Krishna, I come from the Vikings, so I like some little battles. So I will. It was so artful. It was martial arts as its very best, that all the demigods gave up their positions. They didn't serve any longer in their functions of the universe. They wanted to see, and they begged Brahma, give us a free day, you know. We want to see this battle. You take care of everything. You are supremely intelligent. So the only person who didn't see it was Brahma. And you. So everyone else was there. And it was a... I will not describe it. It was really like, for instance, Karna shot some weapon, snake weapon, and when it came, Krishna knew this weapon will kill Arjuna. So Krishna just put the chariot down into the ground by a hand width. This is the hand width, and the arrow which was aimed at Arjuna's forehead only kicked off the crown, because Arjuna's went down and the crown went off. This was not very pleasing to Arjuna. He became enraged, and then he retaliated with another weapon. Finally, Karna was slain. It's a sad story. I will not tell you the details here. You have to read it in the Mahabharata. He was slain. "Those who do not recognize my true transcendental nature fall down." He actually fell down from his chariot. The chariot became arrested by Mother Earth. He couldn't free the wheel any longer, which got stuck in the mud. And then Krishna told Arjuna, "Now is the time where the sun of the life of Karna has to set. You now aim the arrow." Karna protested, I'm not in the position to fight. I'm trying to bring my chariot out of the earth so that I can continue the fight. Just wait. Then Arjuna put down his arrow and his bow, and Krishna said, "You have to do it now." And he did. Karna, then he really met Arjuna at his most vulnerable point. Did Karna wait when Draupadi was attempted to be disrobed? And he shouted to Karna, "You talk about Dharma. What was your Dharma that you disallowed that Draupadi was disrobed in public? You have no right to talk about Dharma. Your Dharma has left you then." And then he said to Arjuna, "Now shoot." So this is how this came down. I think there is a very, very great story in this. Now, I read today a book which Dina Dayal gave me, a book which I found highly intriguing. It's Difficult to Be Good is the name of the book, and it had the story of Karna, but I felt this secret understanding was not really brought out by the author in a way which it deserves to be brought out. My dear devotees, I want to bring this story into your life now. We all have this desire to be recognized, to be appreciated, to get a little sympathy. We need it to exist in our lives. And for that, it is natural that we enter the world of friendships and relationships. But we should know that within our friendships and relationships, which are necessary for us as we go through life, the rising sun is Krishna. That Krishna is necessary for this need in our heart to be taken care of completely. What can a husband do for you? What can a friend do for you? What can your children do for you when it comes to putting that love and affection back into your life which you hanker for? No human being is able to bring this unlimited love back into your life, because you are a part of Krishna. You need to be connected with Krishna and feel His love. You know, as we engage in bhakti, it's necessary for us to give, but also to receive. We need to see in our lives the love of Krishna come streaming our way. Then only, if we can feel this love of Krishna streaming our way or coming our way, can we, you know, be cured inside and healed inside from this tremendous desire, this existential need, which is there, which is psychologically. So it informs most of our activities in this world, this need. So this Japa and Kirtan retreat, which we will start tomorrow evening, I feel, a wonderful opportunity for all of us to enter into a relationship with Krishna again. Bhaktivinoda Thakur makes it very clear, unmistakably clear, that the first relationship a conditioned soul can have with Krishna is the relationship to His name, or with His name. And Gauranga Mahaprabhu puts even more emphasis on this point. He says, if you want to develop love for Krishna, this love which we all need, the experience of love, it will come through the chanting of the holy names with others. Jiva Goswami informs us that as you learn to chant properly, this in Sankirtan, this will produce extraordinary feelings in your heart. You feel the love of Krishna. You will feel something goes on. And I do remember during the last, you know, we have done many 12-hour kirtans, but in our lives, and we want to go all over the world. Now we have tried to arrange something in Australia where the whole country can take part and so on. But I do remember from my own life that this chanting can take care of the need. I want to tell you a little story which is embarrassing for me to tell, but I hope you will forget and not laugh about me too hard. I was once in a train, you know, and I heard two passengers talking about the need to be loved. So I overheard this. I I tried to do my work, write letters, I believe, or I studied something or prepared something. So I didn't participate in the conversation up to a certain moment where this one, I think it was, it's very long back, there was a man who addressed a woman. I have seen in my life, he said, if we as humans don't feel loved, we are not successful in our life, not in our material life, and not in our spiritual life. So when he said spiritual life, my ears went up. And I looked at this man and I saw that on his lap there was a book called Der Weg des großen Abschieds, The Way of the Great Departure. That's a book which I have written in the German language. I also know how to write books. So I said, I just went like, just continue to do my work. And this man went on. That he had, and it was an academic, he had studied spiritual movements, and he had found out when they are taken, when there are nice relationships, people's needs are fulfilled, and they can give their service voluntarily. And so I didn't say anything when I listened, and I thought, when my chance comes, I will also say something. So then my chance came and I said, to draw attention to me. I have listened a little bit to your discussion. May I also join you? And he said, yes, welcome, if you have some point. And I said, I think we need the recognition which we need, we can only get from God. And then I said my famous sentence, which I have stolen from another devotee. We all have a God-shaped vacuum in our heart, and which can only be fulfilled by God. We are His parts, and I went blah, blah, blah with all the philosophy. I mean, I shouldn't say blah, blah, blah. It's divine blah, blah, blah. You know, this is the philosophy. I expressed this. And I had an audience. They were willing to listen to me, and so then in the end I said something where I feel very ashamed of even today. I said, by the way, what book are you reading there? The man said, it's a good book. It's written by, I don't know, by some monk. His name is Satchinandan Swami. He's from a wealthy German family. That's all I know. And then I said the sentence which I'm really, really embarrassed about. This Satchinandan Swami, I said, and I had goose pimples. is sitting right before you. The man looked at me and he looked back in the pictures in the book and and then his face turned sour. He said, take your book back. It doesn't work what you have written. I can see that you still want human appreciation. That's why you said it. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. This is what I learned in the German train. It's an important point. Yes, there is this need in all of us, we may try to cover it up with a philosophical understanding, but it's a very, very strong need, as I learned in the human train, and I'm thinking these days very much about it. I'm thinking very deeply about it, and I've come to the conclusion that Krishna-conscious relationships are important, because in Krishna-conscious relationships, where Krishna is there and in the center, and where you can help each other grow in your Krishna consciousness, you can really become successful in your human life and also in your spiritual life. I think it's very, very important to understand it. Ultimately, only Krishna can help you to fulfill that existential need. And the relationships with devotees are helpful if devotees understand we need to put service to Krishna in the center of our life. We don't want to become like Karna, who had this great need, who was a wonderful personality. You know, I only spoke about this need in a little disparaging way, but we don't want to follow Karna's path. We want who only seek this in friendship. We want to use our friendships as a way to really come in contact with Krishna. And I really believe that as we are now entering into the retreat, tomorrow you still have time to prepare yourself, make your last phone calls, not in your life, eat and sleep sufficiently. We will slowly enter a community of retreatees. We will mix with the lovely community, the Radha Desh community here, and practice Krishna consciousness where we help each other. But it's very clear that those who go on retreat do so to really think about this one relationship, the relationship with Krishna. That is something which we do on the retreat, and I want to encourage you to think about it and to tune yourself in already. From tomorrow evening onwards, we will have a wonderful opportunity to form a community of learners. We have a wonderful opportunity to really have almost a week, I think, it's a free time to just invest in this one relationship. And you will see, if you do this and apply yourself with focus and energy, I mean, you concentrate on this relationship and you give your best into it, you will make realizations which are just life-changing. It's a wonderful opportunity, and I request you to all be part of this great yagya which will start tomorrow in the most lovely environment, this at the lotus feet of Radha Gopinath. And I can promise you, if you talk to Krishna, he will talk to you. And the way we talk to Krishna is, Hey Krishna, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. And the rest of the mantra is known to you. So, this is what I wanted to say to you this evening. It was a little spontaneous because I really have to excuse myself today. It's the only day in my year where I'm tired and cold. Tomorrow everything is over. Hare Krishna, it's called programming. And I just thought about these subjects because I remember today my lessons in the train. Hare Krishna. So, Devi. Thank you. Hare Krishna. What is that? Madhu Gopalji. One of you wrote me a quotation of Srila Prabhupada. Is that person here? Malini Chitra or something?
Yeah.
Is this you? Did you write or?
Yeah, I sent you one quotation.
What?
I sent you one quotation about the holy name.
Yes, with that we can't chant, isn't it? That we can't chant.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. There's a very, you will recognize it in the retreat. We have printed it out. Krishna. Hare Krishna Pujari Maharaj. Your good name? What, your good name?
My name?
Yes.
Shri Arjun.
Prabhu. Hare Krishna. Nice to see you. What is happening? The deities are... Ah, Hare Krishna. Gopal, huh? Shishi Radha Gopinath ki jai. So we will sing a little bit for the deities, requesting them for a relationship.